Okay, well, next I want to, it's a great privilege to get to introduce my friend Kathy McMurray as our speaker today. So Kathy I actually would highly recommend that you check out her, she has a beautiful website, and I actually pulled some information about her from her website, but she is so artistic and creative and beautifully wrote her story on her website, and so I grabbed a few things from there just to give you a little insight into who she is. She says she's a city girl who loves living near the mountains and the sea, and that is really one of her greatest inspirations. She loves Portland because there's majestic mountains, but then the beautiful sea, and just a constant inspiration for her and the work that she does. She's been working full-time on her art since 2009, and before that, she was a high school art teacher for 10 years in the public school system, and even started and cooperated a arts-focused shop in Southeast Portland that represented over 120 different artists, and the mission was to connect consumers to the makers of the art, which I just loved. She says that her art is a manifestation of her spiritual connection to nature and her creator. She's very interesting, and I have thoroughly enjoyed getting to know her. She happens to be the wife of Adam McMurray, who is our senior pastor here at River West. And so some of you may have heard her name before, but Kathy and I got together in her backyard of her house. That's kind of her constant project, it sounds like, in the forest, not too far from here. And we sat outside and got to visit this summer. And as she just shared her heart about art, but about life and about people, I just immediately thought it would be so great for her to get to come and share with you all, that it would be a great encouragement and blessing to you. And to me, to learn from her. So having her in my life has been an inspiration already, and I hope it will be for you today. So today, she's actually going to talk. I sent out the title of her talk, but let me be reminded. It is Living the Creative Life God Intended, and I'm sure she'll tell us more about that. So Kathy, come on up. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. And Jamie pretty much gave a very good bio. What a wonderful intro. I was born and raised here in Portland. Love it. And it's always been my hometown. There was a period of 12 years that Adam and I lived in Eugene, where I taught high school art. And I love that. I was very passionate about that. Currently, I am working on my own art, and I consider it a privilege to be here to talk about two things that I'm passionate about, which is being creative and then also talking about God. So because I was an art teacher, I'm probably going to put you in a really uncomfortable spot right now. Everyone should have some paper in front of them and a pen, and we're actually going to start off by doing a very small drawing exercise. So I know some of you guys are panicking right now, but just trust me on this. So just grab a piece of paper and a pen. I actually, I'm glad that there are pens instead of pencils, because erasers tend to be crutches for so many people. They use it too much, and we need to kind of let go of that. So I'm glad there's pens. Okay, what I'm going to do is have you just draw an ellipse, which who knows what an ellipse is? It's just a fancy word. It's an oval, yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to draw a sideways oval. See, I'm also about vocabulary, so, you know, I'm equipping you with some knowledge. So we're just going to draw an oval on the piece of paper. It doesn't need to be perfect. But what I am going to do is have you draw another ellipse right underneath it that's pretty similar. Okay, everyone got that? You're not going to be graded on this, so you don't need to be scared. It looks good. You guys are doing good. And then we're going to take two lines and we're going to connect the ellipses on the sides. And so what did you make right there? A cylinder. You guys know that. Yes, a cylinder. So why is this important? So in drawing one, I start off with this. This is one of my first lessons I do. Because a cylinder is one of the most basic forms when we draw. That's what we're doing is we're drawing the... What's so hard about drawing is you have a piece of paper that's two-dimensional, right? So it's a square. And we're taking the world, which is three-dimensional, and trying to apply that onto a flat surface, right? Something two-dimensional. So the thing is with a cylinder, now that you know how to draw a cylinder, you can draw all sorts of things out there. It just takes some practice. But the human body, for example, is made up of just a bunch of cylinders. So we have arms, cylinders, right? We have legs, which, again, just cylinders. So then this can be applied to trees. Again, this is all, you know, it's practice. It's actually a skill that can be learned. So that's the thing about drawing. A lot of people think, I'm not good at it. I mean, people just are born with a natural gift. But actually, a lot of creative arts, they're learned skills. So just like basketball, I always talk about, this was like 20 years ago, and I'm not a huge, my husband would know, Muggsy, I don't know his last name, but he's 5'3", he's shorter than me, and he was a pro basketball player. And how does that happen? You know, he obviously wasn't born with the long legs and the height that would give you an advantage. He worked really hard. And he learned, right? He learned the sport. Same thing with arts. You know, if you're passionate about it, if there's some an intrigue, if you're interested in it, I think, honestly, God, you need to listen to that because God has placed that in your heart and follow that. You know, I love even my mother-in-law, her story. She's actually a working artist, and she was a teacher for 30 years. So she took up watercolor after retirement. Fell in love with it, and now she teaches watercolor. So, again, I want today to be a time of encouragement. Hopefully you're inspired. I know that there are some of you out there who you're like, I don't have a creative bone in my body. But what I want to first do is actually turn to the Bible, because this isn't just me. I don't want you to just say, oh, yeah, that's easy for you to say, you know. I want to see what the Bible has to say about this. So I'm going to read from the very, very first verse of the Bible in Genesis. If you open it up right here, in the very first verse, it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." So what do we learn about God from that first verse? I heard it somewhere over here. Yeah, he's creative. So he is the creator of the universe. And the very first act that he does is a creative act, right? And as we continue to read Genesis, the whole chapter is him creating everything, right? Even when we get further along, we get to 26. So, you know, he's created, we all know this story, right? He created heavens and the earth and the seas in the animals. And then in verse 26 it says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness." And he continues to say, "So God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them, and God blessed them." Okay, so he created us, his people, male and female. And it says here, one thing that I want you to camp on is this idea that he made us in his image, in his likeness. So we are his image bearers. So naturally, if God is a creator and he's creative, then what are we? We're a reflection of that, right? And so being creative is part, it's innate, it's part of who we are. So today, you know, I'm going to talk about how we're all creative, and I'm going to actually also go into another book of the Bible that I love, and it's Exodus. We know the story of Exodus. And And this is a part of Exodus that I never really was into for a long time because, you know, you have the parting of the Red Sea. That's amazing. You have these amazing epic things happening. And then, honestly, at the end, you kind of get into, like, the building of stuff. And I remember, you know, for a while, I'm like, oh, yeah, this, the second half of Exodus is a little boring. You know, because it's like, oh, so much building. And, like, why are we reading this over and over? And recently, our Bible study went through Exodus again. And this is the part that I actually, it really hit home with me. And I was just amazed by this whole passage. This in particular, where it's the construction of the tabernacle. And, you know, this is where after Moses came down from the mountain. And the tabernacle, we learn, is a place where God, it's a holy place. It's a place that God's going to dwell. And God instructed Moses to say this to his people. Moses said to the people of Israel, "See, the Lord has called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, son of Hur, the tribe of Judah, and he has filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, with intelligence, with knowledge, and with all craftsmanship, to devise artistic designs, to work in gold and silver and bronze, in cutting stones for setting and in carving wood, for work in every skilled craft. And he inspired him to teach both him and Holiab, the son of Ashiamach of the tribe of Dan. He has filled them with skill to do every sort of work done by an engraver or by a designer or by an embroiderer in blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twined linen or by a weaver, by any sort of workman or skilled designer." And so that's what he did. God calls specifically, he appoints these men, and it says through his Spirit, he gives them the skill and knowledge and intelligence. So what do we learn from that? What is one thing we can take away? This is one message you can talk back. What was that? Yeah, he equips us with these gifts. What a beautiful thing. You know, he gives us these gifts. And he gives us a purpose, right? So it's not just, hey, this is fun. Like, go draw some stuff. But with this purpose, what are they building again? A tabernacle, right? A place where God is dwelling, this holy place. I was thinking, because I also weave, and they're talking about the linens, and I know the process of what goes through that and how time-consuming it is. And even, like, I do some natural dyeing, so when they talk about the colors, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's expensive. And I could see it probably took them a long time. But what an honor it would be, you know, if that was your what you were called to do. And the reality is God calls us to do that today. So we can look back and go, well, that was Exodus. That was a long time ago. But the reality is in 1 Corinthians, it says that God dwells in our hearts, that we are his temple. And so, you know, we honor him by using our gifts. So that's applicable today in our lives. That's such good news, you know. And I hope that that's something that hits home for you, because I know some of you are sitting out there and thinking, oh, I don't know what my gifts are, and I just don't think really, you know, I'm gifted. But the reality is that God says we are. He gives those to us, right? We might not know. We might not know what those gifts are. And I also want to say that, like, that's part of our relationship with God when the Spirit is within us, because it says, too, in Exodus that when these artisans were filled with the Spirit, then they were given the knowledge and skills. And so I know in Adam's talk last Sunday, you know, he talked about being filled in the Spirit. And that's one of the things that we see, you know, that's reflected out of our life is you know, using that giftedness. So I also want to, I know that a lot of you guys are like, okay, I'm just focusing on, like, feeding my little infant child right now. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Because, like, you're in that, some of you are like, I just need sleep. And I've been there. I have two girls. They're teenagers. And so they say teenagers and toddlers are like the same, which I can attest to. I love them. But I remember it was, I don't know if I'm getting older and like just literally forgetting, or maybe I'm choosing to forget, but it's hard. I just remember being at that stage, and I remember at 8 weeks with Lauren, our oldest, and praying, just, I don't think I can go another day without sleep. Like, I was like, we're zombies, and it's hard to go. I don't have time thinking about how I'm going to, it's not like I have all this free time thinking about, oh, what am I going to paint today, you know? But that's why today I'm going to take some time to give you some practical tips, because this is what I've done the last 10 years. Okay, I mean, as an art teacher, you know, that was a full-time job too. But being a full-time artist, it takes discipline. But I learned some things along the way because I was a working mom. So like you, I had to make some choices. And I had to figure out, how am I going to do this, you know, when my kids are so young? And I opened up a business, you know, when my girls were 3 and 6. And it seemed like this is the most ridiculous time I could think of to, like, start something like this. So that's one thing I want to do, is equip you with just some basic things to just kind of for you to think about and hopefully inspire some of you to at least start thinking about yourself. Because it's really important for the health of your family that you think about who you are, what you like to do. It's one of the best things you can do for your children, actually, is to take care of yourself and to think, well, what are my passions? Because that's what your kids are inspired to see their mom pursuing their passions. So if you have, you can use the back of your paper if you want to take notes. I'm going to write I have 7 points for you guys. I'm different than Adam. He has 3, but I say that women like to talk more. So we have 7 today. So the first practical thing is to carve out time. Can everyone see that? So creativity is as much a discipline as it is a gift. Okay, it's as much a discipline as it is a gift. You got to work at it. So that's the first misnomer that everybody thinks. It's like, well, if I'm naturally gifted, it'll just kind of come to me and everything makes sense. But that's not true. You have to really work at it. And probably one of the hardest things to do that's just super, super practical, is just find the time first. And how are we going to do that? I would recommend since all of you guys have little ones, that you start off with twice a week. I think that's manageable. And you can use nap times. I think 45 minutes to start off with is sufficient. I'm a night owl, so I'd capture the time after everyone went to bed. So I'd spend a couple hours, you know, because I'm a night person, and I can actually be super focused, and so I did a lot of my work at night, and I still do. So that's the first practical thing I would say, is just find some time, and you gotta, like, if it means putting it on the calendar, you can't just say, I'll just try to do it. If you're going to take it seriously, then you need to actually put it in your calendar. And actually, when my girls were, the kids, when they're 2, even understand. For one, it's really good for kids to be able to play on their own. So you're actually teaching them a really great life skill. And as an art teacher, it's so important to have them learn how to play on their own so that you can grow their imagination. So that is, I know right now a lot of you guys are doing the mom guilt thing, because I get it. I was there. But you've got to know that this is actually really good for your kids when you capture some time on your own and have your own space, and your kid is also playing. It's really critical, you know, for the health of your child and their imagination that they can learn how to play on their own. So sometimes, you know, like, Bridget's my extrovert, so she's always like, what are you doing, you know, or like, are you done yet, you know, when she's a little kid, and she'd come up, and you know, I'd have her watch sometimes, but, you know, she'd be bored, but I'd say, this is mommy time, and I need 15 more minutes, and even though she might not understand that, I'd say, go play with whatever, and often, she would just kind of get lost in what she was playing with, and I didn't have to. It's not like, you know, sometimes, you know, it depends on personality. But again, if you really just encourage your kid to have that, this is your playtime, then they know what to do. So it's a win-win for both mom and child. Okay, number two is to create a space. So creating a space is critical because it needs to be your space. You need to claim it. When I first started painting, I had an art desk, and I actually moved it into our family room right next to the TV, which, like feng shui, I just threw that out there. Like, that was, like, horrible design, but I was like, I kind of felt weird being separated from the family. I kind of wanted to be with the family, and I was like, I'll just paint while, you know, like, during Monday Night Football or whatever, you know, whatever's happening. And just so that it made me feel like I was still with my family, and it kept me accountable. Like, there's my art desk. I should probably sit there and do something. So it really did work for me. I started painting, and the kids saw me painting. Adam saw me painting, and they would encourage me, like, hey, are you going to finish that painting? And then soon I'd buy more art supplies. And then my corner got bigger, and then soon, yeah, we had a 900-square-foot basement, so within, like, a couple years, I'm, like, kicking everybody out of the basement. I was like, you're not watching football tonight because I have weavings on the couch. But part of that is, again, making a space. Your family sees it. It's yours. You don't have to keep it tidy. Like, true, like, artists, they're not neat. I don't know how that, whatever, on Instagram, that's only after I've cleaned it or something like that. But even then, let it be a space where you don't have to worry about. You know, I know, like, we think about our kitchen, and we got dishes to, and that's another thing is, you have to let go of some of that stuff, too. Because when you see a sink full of dishes, sometimes you feel obligated, I need to get that done first. And I remember telling myself, I'm giving myself the permission to let my house be dirty, and that's okay, so that I can work on this. This is what I'm going to prioritize. And so carving out time and creating a space. It could be just a little table, just whatever. And I realize not everyone here is into drawing. I get that. But creativity, it encompasses so many different things, you know. Poetry, singing, even business, how we network with people, anything that involves problem solving. So you might think, well, I'm not a dancer, or I'm not a, you know. Again, part of it is we got to figure out, well, what is our giftedness? And I think if you give it some time, you'll realize what you're interested in. And that's my next point, find inspiration. I think a lot of people think that, like when I sit in an art desk, there's like some beam from heaven that's shining on my art desk and that God's anointing me with some great inspiration. But honestly, like, when they talk about writer's block, artist block, it's real. Like, you sit there and staring at a blank canvas. Sometimes I literally have stared at a blank canvas for, like, an hour. Like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. And that's okay. Because you're clocking in, right? It's work. That's part of the hard work and sitting there. And what I did when I decided to pursue my art career, yeah, I actually started a blog. Remember those? I started a blog, and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to write about, but it's going to be about art, and I'm going to write every day. So I wrote every day for 6 months about art. And I was like, I don't know if I have 6 months worth to talk about. But I did when I started going online and discovering all these other artists. And I was like, their work is really neat. And I want to share this with other people. And it's super inspiring. And so I just started talking about other people's work. And I would learn what I was into. And I started figuring out, wait a second, I'm really drawn to, like, things of the mountains or things of nature. And it really wasn't until 10 months in. So I drew and I opened up a little Etsy shop because it didn't cost very much and just kind of threw work out there. And but then I remember a moment 10 months in where I realized I like to draw nature. That's what I like to do. So it took me 10 months to figure out what my style was and what I was really honing in on, and that's, you got to give that space, allow that space so that you can learn about yourself, because no one is expecting you to go in and like all of a sudden write a bio what you're interested in and what you're gifted at. It's something where if this is new to you, you've got to learn that part of you, okay? So you've got to find it. Today they have Pinterest, right, which is probably one of the greatest ways. So easy, it's on your phone and you could just type in something and it pops however many options, and you could save it. Super inspiring. So Pinterest, I mean, you could spend your first 45 minutes just pinning things, you know? That sounds fun. But anything that, again, is an action to get you closer to figuring out, again, how you're creative and how you're wired. It could be about fashion. I like talking about clothes. It could, you know, everyone, again, it's, I truly believe we're all creative because that's what God, we are image bearers of him, and he's a creator. Gardening, cooking, you know, all sorts of things. And later after the talk, you'll have an opportunity to kind of talk about that in your groups. Okay, let's go to number 4. Be a curious learner. I love to learn. It's one of the reasons why I became a teacher. And it's really important that part of being a curious learner isn't just like going on YouTube and watching YouTube videos. although it's great. Like, honestly, I'm like, oh, there's... When I started learning how to weave, there weren't any YouTube videos on weaving, really. And I was like, why? It's because I realized when I took a weaving class, like the average age was like 55. And I think a lot of those ladies weren't on YouTube. And so, but now weaving's super popular, and there's tons of, you know, I mean, that's a great craft that you can learn with a book, but honestly, I tell people, if I were teaching a weaving class, that there's things that you learn when you're with somebody that you can't necessarily learn from a book or from a video, and that's why you need to start networking. On social media, I mean, I am pro Instagram, which some of it I know can be hard when you're following all these people and you're like, they're amazing and they're perfect. But just know that they're not perfect and their life is just as messy. They just do a really good job in hiding it. But it's a great tool to connect. I have a lot of great Instagram artist friends and... you know, we have similar tastes. Sometimes we DM each other or talk about different experiences or different tools or whatever. You know, one weaver reached out to me and was like, how do you do those round weavings? It's like, oh boy, okay, this is going to be hard to explain. But, and you know, and so it's a great way of connecting with people who are kind of curious about the same thing. And so take a class. Start talking to other people about it. Pick up a book. But don't limit yourself to just one thing. And don't just stay at home. Like, really, there's like Multnomah Arts Center or other places that offer PCC some great classes. And again, it's an opportunity to be with other people who have similar passions. Okay, number 5. Take risks. This one was a big one for me because if you know me, I'm very much of a planner. My motto is like safety first. So like I'm not a very big risk taker at all. And honestly, it was the one thing that kept me back from opening up. I did have a shop downtown for 2 years. And I had a 60-page business plan. I talked to all these business people. I had all the information just there. But the thing that was holding me back was just making that step and just doing it. Because I was like, what if? Because part of the business plan is you have to write a risk strategy. Like, what happens when this happens, right? And that scared me. I was like, I don't want to put myself in that place. You know, what if? But what happens is then you don't get to experience a bunch of other things out there that can lead you to places you never would have gone, okay, or opportunities that have been open to you unless you took that risk. So our store, in August of 2008, we were celebrating our one-year anniversary, and we had a huge event, artists. We had the best month of sales. And then 3 weeks later, the news came out, and the market crashed. And for 2 weeks, no one came in the shop. And I remember thinking, okay, this isn't good. And I had a board of advisors at that time, and all 8 of them advised, get out. Like, you need to just close shop. But it's kind of like your baby, right? When you create something, it's essentially, it's your own, and it's really hard to kind of let go of that. But we held on as long as we could, and we realized a year later we just couldn't. It was going to take a lot, as many of you know, to recover from that. So the projections were it was going to be 5 years before you came back to where you were. And the day we decided to close the store for good, the next day, September, the next day I opened up my website because I was like, well, I've got to do something. And I realized that all of the stuff that I learned from running a shop, that I could apply it to what I was going to do next. It's like, oh, well, I represented all these other artisans and designers locally. It's like, wait a second, I can do that for myself. So I opened up the website, and I, you know, tried to take my own advice of, like, do this, 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 connect with this, you know, person or network and just start creating things and, you know, get your work out there. So that's what I did. And I've always wanted to have a career where I'm focused on my own painting, but I thought it would happen, like, again, when I was, like, retired, like when I was 60. And so I wasn't expecting it to happen so soon, but looking back, I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't change. I have no regrets about, you know, again, hard things happen. Like, no one could have projected the recession. And my risk strategy, it's not like I was talking to a bank. It's not like they, funny, ironically, but like it's not like they were gonna, you know, they were like, what if there was a recession? So that wasn't even on anybody's radar. And so I don't look back and go, wow, I wish things would have turned out differently. You know, I loved having the store, it was great. But I realized that by taking that risk, it also opened the door for me to pursue something that I was just as passionate about in my own painting. And so good things can actually happen when you just step out. And that leads to also number 6, embrace failure. So this one is probably the hardest one for a lot of people, because for some reason we think when things are really hard or it seems like we're failing, it's not right. And that's a myth. Because the reality is life is hard. Struggle is real. Struggle in marriage, struggle in parenting, struggle in work, struggle in creativity. Okay, you have to understand that. Because what's happening is we are thinking that, oh, well, if it doesn't naturally come to me, if it's too hard, it must not be right. And that is false. I have this painting, probably one of the prints that I sell the most of is this, like, deer by a pond at night. And when I was working on it, every painting I do, there's always a struggle. I learned that very early on. Like, what? This is hard. like, where am I supposed to? At first, I'd be all, like, energized and, oh, I'm going to use this color and this. And then there's a point where you're like, oh, wait, I have to finish this, and I don't know how to finish it. And this painting, I just was not liking where it was going. And it sat on my easel for 6 months. And there's a point, and I saw it in my classroom where I've seen kids halfway through their projects crumple up their drawings and throw them in the trash can. And I would fetch their drawings out of the trash can and say, no, I'm not going to let you give up, because you have to learn how to work through this, because that's where your creativity grows. So part of creativity is problem solving. And so if you eliminate that process, it's actually a critical point of learning that you're stripping from yourself. So I left, as much as I wanted to throw the work in the garbage can, I left the painting on the easel because I heard myself go, no, you can't do that. You can't trash it. And one day I felt super inspired. All of a sudden I passed it, and I remember I wasn't planning on painting, but I passed it, and I was like, wait a second, I know what I want to do. I sat down and I finished it like 6 hours later. I just sat there and just started painting. It's like one of those crazy moments. And I was like, I think I just finished it. And then it, you know, got a real positive response from my followers. And it's funny how every time I see that work or when I ship it off, the print, I'm like, this wouldn't have happened unless I gave that space and, like, embrace this idea that, like, I was failing. And now it's like, here's this moment where I think it's so much more rewarding when you're able to work through that struggle versus at the times when it just comes really easy to you. It's so much more rewarding when you work through that struggle. So just know that. So know when you're sitting there and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm just going to throw this away, that's where you need to stop yourself and just push through. You've got to be your biggest cheerleader and go, okay, I'm just going to let this sit and figure it out. And I'm always amazed that, my greatest growth as an artist comes from those moments. So don't rob yourself of that. Okay, my last point is share your work with others. Now, I'm not asking you to open up an Etsy shop tomorrow. And I'm not saying that every single work it should be made public or you need to share it with all your friends. But I do think that part of creativity, again, being a gift, it was given to you. And when God gives you a gift, it's meant to be shared. So it's part of being in community with one another. So as much as it's a joy, and it's a time, like when I'm painting, I feel the closest to God. I also know he's given us a purpose, right? And we may not know that, what that is, but we need to recognize that being part of a body, that we're supposed to encourage one another with our gifts. I'll give you one example. So early on, when I had my Etsy shop, I sat down and a friend was going through a really hard time in her marriage. Really, really difficult time. And I was broken over it. Like, it was really, you know, I didn't want to paint, like, I don't know, like deer or something fluffy and whatever. I was like, I was really heartbroken. And so I painted something really different. I painted like this desert. It just kind of came to me. the desert, and I painted a sunflower that came, that was growing out of the cracks of the desert. I don't know why. I don't ever paint sunflowers. I just kind of felt like I just needed to paint that. And I painted rain falling down. And to me, it represented God's hope when things seemed super hopeless. The promise of his hope. And I was like, what am I going to do with this piece? And I just decided to put it out there on Etsy, thinking, well, I'll just put it up there. It's super different, but I guess I'll do it. The next day, I got a message from my friend who saw that painting. And she said, I don't know what it is about that painting, but it spoke to me. And that was a friend I was thinking of when I was painting. And so even... to me, that was super touching because it's like, how did she even, like, know that I had posted that? And the fact that, you know, I was grieving for her marriage and that spoke to her through just a painting. And so you never know how God works. So trust that, like, your giftedness, you know, whether it's words that you're just saying to a friend, you know, or sharing a poem or a little clip here or there, however God's using you, you just never know. And you got to trust that he is using you. So there's a purpose there. So I think that we have about 8 minutes for questions. Hopefully, those are some practical tools that you guys can walk away with and apply them. And my biggest hope for today is that you're encouraged to know that you're loved by God, that he created you beautifully, he gave you gifts, and to fall back on that, you know, to take some time for yourself, and to know that that will make you a mom who I think it's so life-giving when, you know, you're using your gifts, and your kids will see that too. So any questions out there for me? Yeah. Yes. We've been really blessed in last year of finding a home with property in the city, which is in the forest. And so I actually have painted in my backyard. But one of my very favorite things to do with Adam is to hike. So I love just seeing just God's creativity all around me. To be surrounded by that, it's the most inspiring thing for me. And so, yeah, I try to be out in nature as much as I can. Yeah, I have. Yep, I brought my sketchbook. I mean, some of these ladies who have gone on retreats with me have seen my little sketchbook. So, and that's the thing, is it doesn't need to always be final work. I mean, just even keeping a little thing with you and writing something down or sketching something down. Yeah.
How do you establish boundaries with your family, kind of respecting or staying out of your creative space?
Mm-hmm.
And is that does your family just accept that the girls can't mess with your paints and your husband can't, you know, set a stack of bills on your art desk?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that something you had to?
Yeah. I do have to remind, like, you know, like Adam's coffee cup would be like by my painting or something. I'm like, but you know, part of it is that actually kids pick up on that really quickly, and so they realize how special it is, and they'll be like, oh, that's mom's painting. You know, now granted, when they're one, it's really hard because little fingers are wanting to. But yeah, even at a very young age, again, Bridget being three, she knew that was mommy's desk. And but sometimes I would invite them to work with me. I'm like, do you want to paint right here on the floor next to me? To encourage them to do that as well. But it is kind of funny being a mom who's an artist, because it doesn't matter what you do, you're just not cool. So, like, your kids are like, whatever. Like, now it's like, do you want to leave with me? No. No, who would want to do that? So I invite, like, other mom's kids to come over to weave with me. So it's like, they want to weave with me. So.
That was one of my questions.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I actually do have a studio in our house. You guys are all, anytime, you can just find me through Instagram, DM me. Honestly, I have strangers who come over. And I feel like anything that's inspiring, kids are really into the weaving process where having them touch the fleece, and then it's like, how do you card the fleece? And it's really intriguing for a lot of kids to see that. We just don't do that in schools anymore, you know, show them the process and, you know, tell them this is how our clothes are made when you weave, you know. And so it's, and again, the whole Exodus story where I think for so many of us, it's like, why do I have to read all of these chapters about building this and using this? And but that was so much part of society, right? And we just don't see that as much anymore. So, yeah.
I wondered if you still teach official classes on the subject of utilities to take classes.
If I still teach? I do teach sometimes in the public schools where I get invited as an art teacher to come and teach lessons. So it'll be temporary stays of like 2 weeks. But I have been thinking about teaching classes, you know, just at my house and stuff like that. And so if I were to announce anything, it'd probably be through social media. But yeah, I'd love to. I do have a heart, again, for teaching. I love to teach. And I guess part of me is like curious how many of you guys would, you know, whether it's painting or weaving or whatever. But yeah, sometime in the future. Yeah, I mean, prioritizing, I think that's our greatest challenge, right, as a mom, and finding what's balance. And I think we're all different. We're wired differently. I know, like, my best friends need, like, 3 hours more sleep than I do every night. So I'm just wired differently, where I only need to sleep 6 hours a night. And so I can kind of gather those hours to work. Whereas for other people, you know, they need their sleep. Or they need some time, downtime. I'm very much of a, I need to get a project done. I'm very task-oriented. And so I recognize that personalities are different. And so you just kind of, again, have to figure out, well, yeah, allow yourself that space. But I do want to emphasize that when you do use your gifts, it is life-giving. It's like, it's not one more thing to do. It's something that actually is very fulfilling, and you actually want to do it. And so I've been super focused right now on like our house and other projects. And so I haven't been painting as much, but my heart's desire is to be at the desk doing that. So I know that at least that I have to listen to my heart's desire and know, well, yeah, I mean, I don't have as much time, but I recognize that that's what I want to do. And that, yeah. So I don't know if that answered your question. Okay, yes.
How do you find your online store?
It's my name, KathyMcMurray.com. With a C.
You have an email at the end of your website?
Yeah, you could contact me, yeah, through the shop. And yep. Yeah, I love to cook. It's actually one of the ways that also I show my creativity. And honestly, I love following people on Instagram who create these beautiful dishes. And maybe that's kind of, I love how social media can keep you accountable in a way, in a good way. You know, again, it's a balance. But like if I were pursuing like cooking, and start showing that to my friends or to whoever wants to follow me, that keeps me accountable. If I had a goal, like, okay, every week I'm gonna post a new dish that I do. And you can use hashtags. You know, I can give the business practical side of things, too, of like how do you get your stuff out there, you know? We could talk about that later. But, yeah, in terms of cooking, I would say same thing. Like, find the people you're inspired by, use different ingredients, post it online, talk about it. It's very contagious when you're really passionate about something to hear somebody talk, you know, when it's like, it's super inspiring. And so it will show in what you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, our youngest is into performing arts, so we encourage her to, and she just naturally, it's so funny because she's a singer, like Adam, and been singing, like, literally in the womb. And it's so funny because we, with what they're gifted at, we almost, that's how we, like, discipline them, like, no more singing, you know, like, it's like, I never imagined as a parent we'd, like, have to say that, or, like, our eldest loves to read, so I have encouraged her to, like, go into literature, and we would, like, take her books away, or, like, no more reading, you know, because it was, like, because they, part of it, too, is we want them to be well-balanced children, so, like, Lauren would, like, hide in her room for, if she could, for, like, 12 hours a day and just read books. It's like, let's do other things, like, talk to other people. And so I think your kids actually naturally, you'll see what they, you know, I see little one-year-olds with building blocks, and I'm like, he's going to be an engineer, or I could tell the way, you know, kids, their motor skills, like I've seen one-year-olds, I put a pen in their hand, and I'm like, wow, their motor skills, so advanced, and just encourage, you don't, obviously some of that, you don't know, like, what, like, are they going to be in fine arts? Are they going to be, you know, in a dancer? I don't, you know, you just, sometimes you don't know that until they're a little bit older. But give them that space. Because I think as parents, we kind of choose those things for them. Like, you're going to be, like, when our girls were little, we're like, you're going to take soccer, you know, because Adam's a huge soccer fan. And I realized when they were running away from the ball, like, it just wasn't... Like, this isn't going to happen. So as parents, sometimes we force them into things that we think they need, but give them that space to kind of figure that out. I heard somewhere that, I also wanted to mention this, and then it's time's up. By the way, for some of you who are like, yeah, my kids are not at the right age, about the taking risks thing, the one thing that finally got me to, like, step out and open up the business, I pursued a good family friend who's a family counselor, and I kind of, like, just poured my heart and was like, the girls, like, they're so young and impressionable, and I just don't know. I feel like I'm choosing the business over being a mom. And she said, actually, this is the best time to do anything risky or big is when they're little, because they don't remember anything and they're super, like, easy. You just kind of tote them around, or she's like, it's when they're teenagers, they remember everything and demand everything from you. And so she was like, which now, having, you know, teenagers, that's true. Like, I think it would have been so much harder to open a business now with the kids at this age, because you're taking them everywhere and they have their own life. And so I want to bring that up because I think some of you are probably like, this isn't the right time, I'll just wait when the kids are older. But that's what actually got me to finally just pursue the business, because it allowed me, it kind of gave me permission to do that and not worry about my kids. And the girls actually talk very, even though they're young and it's only 2 years, they talk very positively about the story, even though I was there all the time. They're like, remember when we ran around? And they have these little memories. And so it was positive for them. And I think if you can keep that where what you take home, you know, if you're always stressed out, or, you know, there are times when we're definitely impatient and whatever, but note that
it's really good for your kids to see you pursuing, again, things that you're passionate about. So that was kind of a little tangent, but I think we're done. So thank you.